You know, when Jesus comes into his kingdom, somebody's going to have to run things. Obviously, it'll be me. I'm the rock. I'm the one he relies on the most. No way, Peter. You always put your foot in it. Wasn't it just last week he yelled at you and said, "Get thee behind me, Satan"? Oh, so it should be you, James, or your brother John, the two sons of thunder, would be better leaders? Hey. You know Jesus is the only one who gets to call us that without getting a fat lip. Anyway, all of you, I know what it's like to be in the thick of fighting against politicians. I am in a better position to lead. And you're a known zealot, Simon. You already have so many people who are against you. Oh, and everyone loves you, Thomas, with your constant sarcasm. Hey, what are you guys arguing about? As if Jesus didn't know. Is Jesus shaking his head at this point, thoroughly disheartened? He's just told them again, the second time in Mark's gospel, that he's tried to get their attention to this, that he is going to suffer and die. And they still don't get it. They've still got a conquering Messiah and power on their minds. But it's not just that they don't get it. It's that they knew they didn't get it, and it was scary, and so they were afraid to ask him. It's a hard, hard thing to ask. What do you mean you're going to die? So they avoid the tough question. Let's stick with rise. We heard rise. We understand rise. When you rise to power, you're going to need a right-hand man. Now that we understand. Who's the greatest? Sometimes we leave the tough questions out. We ignore them. And we go to what we understand instead of what's hard. But most of the important stuff is hard, isn't it? And what Jesus is teaching his disciples is hard, important stuff. And he has chosen them. He knows that these are the people who are going to have to carry on his message when he goes. They need to understand. But here they are, arguing about the exact opposite of what he's been teaching them and showing them. It must frustrate Jesus to be living out time and again that his power is a different kind of power, that his new kingdom is about drawing all of us in, reversing power structures, raising up the lowly, professing God's love, and how we have to live that kind of love to a bunch of people who don't even seem to want to get it. Well, it is easier to avoid what we can't figure out, to avoid what scares us. Lots of us put things off. You know who you are. I come from a family of avoiders. The car is making a funny noise. I should get that checked. I hope it isn't going to be a $1,000 repair. That is so scary. So, yeah, I'll get it checked soon. And then I end up getting it checked when it breaks down and won't start at all, and I have to call AAA. And please, God, don't let that be today in front of all these people in the St. Mark's parking lot. But there are bigger things that we avoid too, right? There are moral dilemmas in how we live in this divided society, how we live into our responsibility as Christians. We may find ourselves doing what the disciples did, avoiding the scary thing that we don't understand, that our Lord lived into suffering and death to show us just how much we are called to care for each other. And instead, we focus on what's familiar. And what's familiar in this culture is jockeying for position. The same thing that was familiar to the disciples, who were bickering as they walked along this road, where in Mark's telling, Jesus is traveling away from his renown as a teacher and a miracle worker and heading through some of the back roads toward danger with an urgency in teaching his disciples. but they're afraid to ask Jesus what this sacrifice he's talking about means. And really, who can blame them? They're walking right along beside him. Maybe they're afraid of what Jesus is going to ask them to do. It's a big question. And I think it's as big a question for us as it was for the disciples who were walking along with Jesus that day. Am I afraid of what Jesus might ask me to do? When living into the question, I have to admit that I have been at times afraid of and continue to struggle with the sacrifices Jesus might ask of me if I really focus on following him with my whole heart. I might have to give more of my time, more of my own money, more of my attention, more of my autonomy. It's uncomfortable to try to humbly and authentically live into being last instead of striving to be first, best, most, closest, favorite. And yet, the Spirit continually beckons us to something deeper than that. We know this, and we live in the tension. There are societal implications. We want people to have food and shelter and health care and safety and dignity. That's simple enough as priorities for living together in a decent society. But we also want sensible fiscal policies, so it's not easy to make it happen. Not easy for me to share and maybe support paying more or welcoming the stranger, especially when our culture teaches an off-kilter kind of idea of freedom, which means I do mine, you do yours. And there are personal implications as well. I am a creature of my culture. I can fill my time to the brim with busy, important things so that I can be proud of myself and get a lot done, good things, and feel accomplished. Yet Jesus doesn't call me to accomplishment. Jesus calls me to relationship. That's how I get closer to him. And relationship takes spending time in prayer, finding quiet time with Jesus in spiritual practice, right alongside the lived out action of being a Christian. Why am I afraid of that? Well, who knows what I might hear in the quiet? It could be scary in there. Jesus wasn't preaching accomplishment. He was preaching, be like a child. And whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all. That's not how we roll. And frankly, being servant of all doesn't sound like that much fun. Jesus will ask that of me. So like the disciples in today's gospel, we avoid digging in there with Jesus. And the letter of James that was read today names it. Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? Yes, they do. The cravings that are at war within us are the cravings to listen to culture and be about the self, to make myself and mine first, pushing against the true self, the spirit of the divine within that yearns to move closer and closer to recognizing our connection, to be filled not with worldly glory and goods, but with the love of Jesus, which is already there always. But often we're too busy bickering about who's the greatest to see it. But today, as in every age, we are the disciples who need to understand, to not avoid. Jesus has given to us to be the people who have to be carrying on his message. We need to understand. The brilliant writer Annie Dillard called out, "Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? There is no one but us. There is no one to send, nor a clean hand, nor a pure heart on the face of the earth or in the earth, but only us. And we ourselves, unfit, not yet ready, having each of us chosen wrongly, made a false start, failed, yielded to impulse and the tangled comfort of pleasures, and grown exhausted, unable to seek the truth, weak and involved. But there is no one but us. There never has been. Is Jesus going to ask something hard of you, even if you're not the greatest? Yes. He's going to ask you to trust him, to live with the questions and the ambiguities, and to still believe, to love with your whole heart, and to love your neighbor out loud in a culture of me and mine first. He's going to ask you to not distract yourself from the hard questions of Christian servanthood, the questions that come in living a Christ-centered life, but to open your heart and move closer. He will ask you to transform your life, and in making yourself least, find fullness of joy beside him. Let us revel in recognizing that being God's beloved child is what makes each and every one of us the most and the best, including you.